You're listening to a podcast from 702.
It's our second Monday, every second Monday date, where we come together to clarify things that are out there in public discourse, the claims that have been made that have gone viral. And as Africa Check, as a fact-checking organization, you're able to set the record straight. Hi.
Absolutely. Hi, Azza. Yeah, we continue to do a lot of fact-checking around COVID-19 and a range of myths, fake cures, fake videos that are doing the rounds. And we're really just trying to do our bit to help sort fact from fiction and make sure that the public, both here and in Kenya, Nigeria, and Senegal, have access to accurate, good information.
Yes, yes. I mean, this past weekend, the Twitterverse was just alight with what is coming out of Madagascar. But I see even the World Health Organization has finally commented on this matter, saying that they're warning that Madagascar's herbal tonic that its president claims can cure patients of COVID-19 has no scientific basis, even as the president of Tanzania has promised to send a plane to go and fetch, you know, bales, just crates and crates of this herbal tonic. So it's easy to get swept up in what happens in the news cycle, what happens in social media cycles. And that's why this exercise is so important. You have two videos that have been doing the round, and videos that say, or that say that the violence that is demonstrated in them is happening in South Africa during our coronavirus lockdown.
Yeah, absolutely. We were actually sent this video on our WhatsApp line. We have a number that people can use to forward us messages that they get on WhatsApp. And this is how we got this video. And like you say, it contains two clips which show what looks like street violence or protest. Mm. And at the beginning of the video, there's text on top of the video that says, "Lockdown South Africa working well. Can't wait to go there on holiday." And then you proceed to watch. In the first video, it looks like members of a crowd attacking a police officer, pulling him off his bike. And then in a second video, it's what looks like Johannesburg CBD with a large crowd of people attacking police fans and throwing stones at them. Mm. And people got in touch with us and asked us to have a look at these videos and see if we could determine if they actually showed street violence during the lockdown in South Africa.
That's definitely very comforting to know that our audience now knows that, you know, they're not hearing it in the news cycle. They're not hearing it on 702, on EWN, or on the news bulletins in the evening and so on. So where could this be originating from? Where is it happening? And secondly, the fact that they know they can turn to you for this sort of confirmation.
Yeah, I think actually you've highlighted a really important point that does make some of the work we do more difficult. Increasingly, we are seeing a mistrust and a distrust in what is broadly described as mainstream media. And people think if they get a video and it claims to show something, that because it hasn't appeared on radio or being shown on TV, it must be being hidden from people or someone's trying to suppress it. But in most cases, it hasn't appeared on the news or it hasn't been on 702 because it hasn't happened.
Exactly.
And clearly, as we go through these videos and we take a look, the listeners will hear that and understand why if this had actually happened in South Africa, it would definitely have been on the news.
Mm. So we've gone through the process of how you start verifying the authenticity of something like a video clip. What was the process this time?
Yeah, so in the video that was shared, you could actually see that it was a recording of an Instagram story. And that's where on Instagram, you know, you can post normal pictures in your grid, but you can also post short videos and stories that disappear after 24 hours. Mm. And this video that we got on the top left-hand corner, you could see that it had been shared on Instagram as a story by a person called Mel Dean. And it turns out that this is actually a former professional rugby player. And he had shared it in his stories to his almost 30,000 followers. Mm. We reached out to him to understand where he got the video from, because it looked like there was another handle behind his name, which suggested that maybe he hadn't been the one who created it. But unfortunately, we didn't hear back from him. We're still waiting to see if we do. So we then just started the next step of really trying to verify these videos independently. And that involves some Google reverse image search. It involves searching for key terms or phrases that describe the video.
Yeah.
And in that way, we were actually able to nail down where these videos came from, what they showed, and when they were filmed.
So where did the first one come from?
So the first one, like I said, it's quite violent. It's not pleasant to watch. It shows this police officer being pulled off his bike by a crowd and being attacked. And it actually turns out that this video was shot in Sao Paulo in Brazil in November 2019. Mm-hmm. And I think that most people who would have seen this video in South Africa would have been able to tell it was in South Africa. Just the streets didn't have the look or feel of the cities that we live in.
Yeah.
And we were actually able to find a news report that explained that the video captured a confrontation between members of the police and people who live in an area of the city that is commonly known as crackland. And it's renowned for its violence, its drugs. And there are often incidences like this emanating from the area. So the first video, definitely not South Africa, comes from Brazil. It doesn't show lockdown violence in our country.
Right. That sorts that one out. So if you come across this video as Kate has described, you know the origins, and you might come across it in your WhatsApp group, people intending to instill fear, you know how to respond to that one. What about the second video?
Yeah, so the second video, I think most South Africans, when they saw it, they would have said, yep, that's our country. And what it shows is a very large crowd that looks very, very angry. And they're advancing on a South African police vehicle, throwing stones, shouting, trying to attack it. And the police vehicles are trying to reverse and get out of there because I think they realized they weren't in a good situation. But using just keywords that describe the incident, we were able to search online and we found that, yep, it was filmed in South Africa. It was shot in Johannesburg CBD and it was actually filmed in July 2019. Right. And what the video shows is a confrontation between the South African police and the JMPD and shop owners in the CBD because the police tried to confiscate counterfeit and fake goods from shop owners and the shop owners retaliated and attacked the police.
Yes.
So this video is from us. It's from our country and it's from Johannesburg, but it is not related in any way to the current lockdown in South Africa and it doesn't show violence that's happened recently.
Great. So that solves, rather, that settles that one. Noah has given us a call. Good afternoon, Noah.
Hey, Azania. Thank you so much for this discussion. Hi there, Kate.
Hi.
The question that I have, I think this is a very important discussion, right? I consume a lot of social media content like most people in this country. But I've noticed that the infodemic in many ways, because it seems like this is a real problem, is not going to be solved by the social media companies. So I'm just curious to find out what you think. At least on your side, with someone that has, you know, institutional experience, what can be done with organizations like yours to at least curb this infodemic? Because you see sites, for instance, on Twitter and Facebook that deem themselves as legitimate on things that are happening in South Africa and the rest of the continent. And half of the time, the information is either distorted, they are malicious omissions from that information. The crisis is much more fundamental to our society than we actually think at the end of the day. So I think if we can just have that discussion perhaps about how you think that Africa Check and probably other organizations can try and participate in policy, in assisting companies like Google, Twitter, Facebook, in actually curbing this serious problem.
Because
misinformation at the end of the day, I think, is going to be the killer's heel that probably going to create a lot more problems out of something like coronavirus than just the
Well, no, you may be hearing our conversation for the first time, but we do this every second Monday with Africa Check. And out of some of the examples we've had, it always elevates a particular aspect to why this is so damaging. Kate, you'll help me on this one because recently we also focused on the consequences of when this misinformation, when people believe it and start to exercise it in society. One of our more recent chats. stats, but you're spot on, Noah, and we all have to be very discerning about what we share and what we deem to be true. We have to also ask people for sources and say, what is your source on what you have tweeted, on what you have shared? For instance, this Mal Dean, who's a former professional rugby player, should have been challenged on that to say, what's the source for this video that you purport is from South Africa? Because that's highly damaging to our country, the brand of the country. Yes, we have violent crime, but ultimately as well, you wouldn't want things that are not yours attributed to you, because it's going to hamper on things like tourism and the economy, broadly speaking. Thank you for that point, Neil. Very important.
Thank you so much.
Sure. Kate?
Yeah, that was such a great comment, because I think what was highlighted there was how we have a multifaceted problem. If it was just a simple solution of large tech companies like Google, Twitter, Facebook solving this problem, it would be an easy problem to solve. You know, if we could solve it in a day, it would be possible. But unfortunately, we're facing a multifaceted problem, and we need global tech companies to step up. And in some regards, we have seen that. We are part of Facebook's third party fact checking program, where we assist the platform to combat fake news. We are also in the business of fact checking, so we help address individual dangerous claims which are made. But then we also have to try and deal with it in other ways. So some ways that we try and approach another aspect of the problem is by offering training to community media groups, to normal media houses in fact checking, so that we can make sure that when it comes to the media side of things, to journalists and reporters trying to get accurate facts out fast, they have, you know, really basic but important skills to sort fact from fiction and make sure they don't publish anything that could mislead or be dangerous in any way.
Yes, yeah. We've got a WhatsApp that says the video is of an actual event that happened 2019 August, the throwing of stones in Joburg CBD. I investigated myself a short while ago after seeing it on someone's status. And that's, I think they're referencing the second video that you helped to clarify as well. So good on this person for also investigating for themselves. And the first one is not from South Africa, but the second one certainly is, but it is not COVID-related, as was purported. It is, of course, concerning nonetheless, but it happened due to other circumstances last year. Absolutely. Now, let's go on to the second video. Oh, not second video, rather our second analysis. Second analysis. And it has to do with food parcels. I found this exercise so interesting because we've been talking about food parcels for a number of weeks as more and more families and fellow citizens find themselves hungry and on the verge of being destitute and just not knowing where the next meal is going to come from. Government has said a lot about food parcels, whether provincially or nationally. Even the stimulus package that the president announced for 500 billion rand included a component, of course, of ensuring that this aspect is sorted out. So let's take a listen to what Gauteng Premier David Makura had to say, speaking to the national broadcaster about food parcels.
In Gauteng province, we are reaching 2,000 households, that's families, on average a family of four people. We are reaching 2,000 households per day. And every day we do a new number. We are supplying them with food enough for 1 month.
Right. And that's the end of the clip. That's the essence of what we will be interrogating. So what triggered your curiosity about this issue, Kate?
Yeah. So when we heard the statement, it was actually curiosity. We follow developments in the news, and we had seen a lot of people talking about the food parcels and whether they were enough to survive on. And when we heard the statement made by the Premier, we were intrigued and curious about when he said food enough for 1 month, because that sort of gives a quantify. It tries to quantify how much food is being given and whether it is enough for a month.
Yeah.
And anyone who visits our website and clicks through to this link will see that we didn't publish a fact check, as we often do with a verdict, because the phrase, saying enough, it isn't a very concrete term. What is enough for one person may not be enough for another. But we were intrigued enough to want to see what exactly was in these food parcels and if there were ways that we could check whether that was actually enough for a person for 1 month.
Mm. And as part of this analysis, it means you have to understand some of the conditions that affect people when it comes to food, firstly, and also the under lockdown. So these two, when they collide.
Absolutely. And we know that the lockdown has placed enormous stress on people who have lost their jobs or haven't been able to work and in turn have lost their income. And in South Africa and in Gauteng, we know that there have been issues of food insecurity. If we look at national data back in 2012, we see that in the whole of South Africa, you know, 26% of South Africans reported experiencing hunger. And in Gauteng, the figure was slightly lower at just over 19%. Mm-hmm. And more recent data, which was a survey that was conducted by the city of Johannesburg, actually estimated that in 2017, there were an estimated 6 million people who could be food insecure within the greater Johannesburg area.
What does food insecurity mean?
So there are different definitions of what food insecurity means, and it's often a measure which is used instead of measuring hunger, because hunger can be very difficult to quantify. But generally, a household is considered to be food secure when all people in it at all times have physical and economic access to sufficient, safe, and nutritious food that meets their dietary needs.
Right. One of the contentious issues has been around who has gotten the food parcels and why. If we put aside the criminal, corrupt side of this issue, as has been enacted by councillors along with whoever they've collaborated with on this matter, and look at what is stated and what is within the law, who gets a food parcel and why?
So if we just look at the situation in Gauteng, because that's what we were interrogating.
Yeah.
Our queries were directed to the province's Department of Social Development. And when we spoke to the spokesperson there, he said that the food packages which are being provided are part of an existing program that has already been operating. Mm-hmm. And that program was previously providing these food parcels to people in need, which included women, children, and disabled people. But now with the lockdown, they've broadened the groups that they're providing to. And now you can get a food parcel, or people are getting food parcels if they are unemployed or if they're earning less than 3,600 rand per month, according to the department.
So those are the conditions. But what goes into it? Were you able to find out what constitutes a food parcel?
Yeah, so we asked the department to tell us what was in it, and they gave us a list. It has quite a few things in it. So it has 12.5 kgs of maize meal, there's 5 kgs of rice, 1.5 liters of oil, 4 cans of baked beans, 5 kgs of instant porridge, 5 kgs of macaroni, 5 sachets of instant soup, 5 kgs of sugar, 750 grams of powdered milk, 500 grams of soya mints, and then 375 grams of puza mancha powder, which is a high energy drink or meal. Mm-hmm. So that's what people are getting in their food parcel. The department said that the brands may vary depending on what they're able to get, but every food parcel will have a brand of some sort to make up that list.
Yeah, so a lot of non-perishable items.
Yeah, as well as a couple other things which they consider dignity items.
Yeah.
So in each parcel, you're also going to get a toothpaste, soap, 1 washcloth, condoms, and then sanitary towels. Mm-hmm. And the department said that this parcel is packaged to last 1 month.
And that's the other thing, when we said enough for 1 month, was there a stated criteria of what, of how many people this would be feeding? Because our households vary in number, they're multiple generations, people of different dietary needs, for instance, constitute a household.
So this is something that we asked the department. The premier said in the interview that on average, this parcel was being provided to a family of 4.
Okay.
And so we asked the department, how did they determine how much food should be put in this parcel to last for a month? And we were told it was difficult to determine because families' needs differ, but the department was pretty adamant that families would have to save and ration to make sure that it would last a month.
Right. And what about what is enough?
So that's a tricky question because we know that different people get by on different amounts. So we tried to look for, you know, internationally accepted and used numbers for how much people need to eat on a daily basis.
Yeah.
A good measure is provided by the United Nations. They have a lot of guidance on how much food and how many calories a person needs to eat every day in what they describe as an emergency situation.
Mm-hmm.
And examples of those include things like a drought, but they also list things like an economic disaster. And they say that a person needs at least 2,100 calories per day.
Mm.
Interestingly, this is also the amount that is used by the World Food Program for their standardized food basket. And it's the same amount that is used by Statistics South Africa as the benchmark for what it considers the food poverty line.
Okay. All right. And is that what we're getting out of this food parcel, 2,000 calories per day for, say, an individual in a family of four?
So no, that's not what we found. So we took the list as provided by the department and we looked for how many calories were included in that food basket.
Yeah.
And we found that for a family of four to make the parcel last for a whole month, they would have to restrict themselves to 1,145 calories per day.
Mm.
And that's just over half the daily calories that are recommended by the UN and the World Food Program.
So it's just over half. And this is, of course, working on the fact or dividing it equally that these are all, say, adults or the standard 2,000 calories.
But if we look and say there were two adults and two children in the family, this amount would still be less than is recommended even for a child from the age of 5 to 18.
Yes.
Children from 5 to 9 are recommended to have 1,500 calories per day. And adults who are sedentary, so people who are sitting at home like a lot of us are, are recommended to have at least 1,500 to 2,000 calories per day. Importantly, experts said that people can and do survive on this sort of number of calories, but they will expect to see weight loss and they will probably be missing out on some important nutrients and vitamins.
Yes, because it's very carbohydrate heavy.
It is. So that was the one concern from the food experts that we spoke to, is that most of the food parcel is starch and carbohydrate heavy, and there is very little healthy protein. And apart from the lack of nutrients that people will be receiving, they also said that more good protein like tinned fish would provide better nutrients, but would also help people feel fuller for longer. And this is especially important when people don't have the option to snack because they have to ration the food that they have.
Absolutely. What an incredible exercise, Kate. And hopefully, you know, with the guidance of other experts in this field, this is something that the provincial government can really study quite closely, as you said earlier, about more complex carbs, maybe legumes, beans, and so on, and then other forms of protein, healthy protein like tinned fish. I mean, we grew up on tinned sardines, which are high in the omegas and other good oils. And so that how it's composed, the composition of the food parcel, certainly is an opportunity for improvement. But I think this was a fantastic exercise.
Thank you. So we tweeted the link to it. So if anyone wants to have a look at the numbers or the breakdown of our calculations, we have an Excel spreadsheet. You can dig into them and see exactly what you would get if you got a food parcel in Gauteng.
Excellent. Retweeting as we speak. Thank you so much, Kate.
Thanks, Azza.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
You too. The Deputy Editor of Africa Check, Kate Wilkinson, talking matter of fact. How did you find that? And as she said, it's all there on Africa Check's website. You can go back and just read it in greater detail about the sources that they referenced, the conversations that they had, of course, with the provincial government in getting to the bottom of what goes into a food parcel and what enough actually is, and whether this food parcel is providing enough food and enough calories, enough nutrition for families in South Africa.